Good evening, gents. Just something to kick off, I'd like to, most people probably met Maurizio already, but this is Maurizio De Montis from Rulin Care. Yeah. We're getting that right, yeah. And we're going to get an introduction to noise source identification techniques. So without further ado, Maurizio.
Thank you. Good evening, everybody, and thanks for inviting us.
There's only me here, but anyway.
Oh, thank you. So what I thought I'll do first, I'll just give you most of you, I think, know us from olden days, from old products that we don't make anymore and divisions that we have divested of. But just a quick introduction so I can show you what we do nowadays. It's very much engineering, industrial, environmental, rather than recording studios and high fidelity recording, but still very much there, of course, in this space. And so I'll just give you a quick update of how we set up in Australia, how we structure in terms of product lines. We have three main product divisions today, and then we'll move into the introduction to noise source identification. Now, noise source identification means, as the name suggests, the ability to using engineering tools to identify where the noise comes from, what frequency, what levels, okay? And then from that, make necessary engineering judgments and using for troubleshooting and design improvements and so on. I took many slides out because my Danish colleagues like a lot of mathematics and even poor me just had some trouble just following it all. Anyway, so I reduced it to two slides per technique, just to give you a flavor of the top level technique used behind. Okay, but anyway, without further ado, I'll first go introduce us in Australia, and then we'll dive into the other subject. Okay, so. To date, and this is wrong, actually, that's in St. Kilda Road, so I haven't corrected it yet. Excuse the flashing banners, but there you go. Last year, BNK turned 70. Dr. Kier and Dr. Bruel registered the company in Copenhagen in 1942, November, to be precise. Oh, sorry, December, 4th of December. We've been around for a little while. Well, they have been around for a little while. Unfortunately, Dr. Kier just died 3 months ago. He was 97, so he had a good life. But Dr. Brule is still with us. He's 95 now. So they obviously sold the company 20 years ago or more. So anyway, but they're obviously in everybody's heart, at BNK. Now in Australia, we have. We have been in Australia with an official office in the very, very olden days. We had an agent. I forgot the name of the agent. But since 1974, BNK decided to install an official entity, and originally only in Sydney, I believe. But today we have two technical sales offices, one in Sydney and one in Melbourne, or Clayton. In Sydney, we have a bit of a bigger office. There's two guys. Sorry, I have to use my pointer. Don't have one. There you go. We have two guys, Neil and Father, that have been there between 22 and 10 years, 12 years actually, so quite a while. And they in Melbourne, there's me and Michael. I've been BNK for 2.5 years now, and Michael just a year and a half. So we're both newbies, kind of, because again, I'm on BNK for 20 years myself, at least. So Father Neil, me and Michael are the customer interface technical, certain level of technical support. If it goes too far, then of course we have friends in Denmark to help us out. In Sydney, we also have a service and calibration department, three guys. Jan, who's a Danish national, some of you might know him, actually. He's been in Australia for 30 years. He worked at the factory in Denmark for 10, something like that, no. 25 years in Australia, 15 in Denmark. So he's been in Australia for a while. And he just celebrated 40 years with us. And then Craig is a Jeep. And so there we do calibration of sound level meters, microphones, vibration sensor, accelerometers. And we also do some level of repairs, run some level of repairs. And I'll show you later in a second. Actually, we also have a large range of electrodynamic actuators. I don't know if you, well, basically very, very big loudspeakers used for vibration testing, okay? So Craig is our local specialist for that product line. And we have quite a few in Victoria, actually. They are large, high-cost machines. If you think that's expensive, one of those shakers, much more. And then, of course, let's not forget Marianne. They help us out. Since, well, about 4.5 years ago, I don't know if you actually know, but B&K is owned by another company, a British company called Spectris. It used to, many, many years ago, be the Fairey Group, and in the 20s used to be an aircraft manufacturer. Anyway, over the years, aircraft manufacturing in the UK, as some of you might know, declined dramatically. Anyway, so they became basically a financial group, but always in the engineering space. And over the years, they acquired all these companies, okay? That includes also us. 4.5 years ago, they also acquired an Australian company, startup about 15 years ago, called Lockhart. Go back here. They are based in St. Kilda Road, and that's where we are moving in next week. So we join in them in their big office. So these guys, before becoming Bruhl and Kjær, developed a cloud-based, so web-based environmental noise monitoring system. And predominantly, well, exclusively actually, in the airport noise monitoring business. So in Australia, all of the international airports, New Zealand, all of the international airports, London, all of the international airports in London, and so on and so forth, have system from Bruhl and Kjær now. They do continuous monitoring of noise on the perimeter and flight path and so on. So today we have, to date, we have about 254 airports worldwide monitored by Bruhl and Kjær. So this is a service. There's hardware, B&K hardware on the ground, and then the data center is in Richmond, so it's local, and the web services are in this office, and we monitor and issue reports for customers on a 24-hour basis. Okay. Also, a few defense, RAF sites have these systems in place, and the past 2-3 years, we also deployed new system like this in mining, urban, constructions. We have very large contract in WA in various mining sites where noise is an issue, because that's what that system is for, is compliance. Okay, so anyway, long story short, in Australia nowadays, because of this office mainly, there's 70 of us. Okay, so there's about six plus us, eight, and then about 50, 60 here in this office. Okay. But they, so what happened with this acquisition and another acquisition in the UK, now B&K has three product divisions. So one of the first product division is sound and vibration. So that's the classic business that you know as well, in terms of recorders, level recorders, microphone, and so on. Then we have the environmental management services, and then vibration test systems. And I'll show you in a second. Just don't want to forget them, because they worked with us for 25 years in Perth and 33 in New Zealand. So these are our distributors. They about the same distance, 3 hours flight, 3.5 hours flight each way. Too far for us to travel. So we work with these guys there, but they're part of the family. Okay, as I said, just part of this group, but very briefly, we fall under the test and measurements umbrella of companies. Bruhl and Kjær, HBM, you wouldn't know them, but they are also top of the market for time domain data acquisition, durability, fatigue analysis of structures. So they do, for example, load cells, strain gauges. I don't know if you know what they are, but they little resistor you put on surfaces and measure the strain of surfaces. So bridges, for example, are equipped with these things. And they use EF for integrity, structural integrity, and so on. But they also have simulation software that allows them to do prediction of how long one bracket or something could last. or should last. I'll spare you all the other companies. The message that I have to present is all these companies are market leaders in the field. So B&K is still the market leader for sound and vibration worldwide. We have largest market share in all products, actually, still. So. Okay, now, just very, very briefly on the three product division, sound and vibration. So what we do there still is transducers. So that's microphones, all shapes and sizes for different applications, niche applications. For example, 4949 here, a flat microphone. So that's a surface mount microphone, super slim. It's about, this is very technical. I don't know if you can see it. It's about that thick. This was developed with Airbus Industries to measure aerodynamic noise during landing of their aircraft. So they came up with this design together with Brolin here. These microphones are effectively mounted flush in the wings, so not to affect the airflow on the aerofoil on the wings. And they used for to measure pressure fluctuation on the surface, which of course induced noise then. Okay. The one I just showed you before, that's actually our, what's the word for it? Mass production microphone, kind of. But 4189 free field microphone used on our sound level meter by default. It's sound level meters come equipped with this microphone. But we have thousands and thousands and thousands of these. If you look on the internet, you probably find if someone is measuring some noise, you'll find one of these sticking on the side. There's a nice video from Walker's Crisps in the UK. They make chips, sorry. Crisps doesn't work here in Australia. There's a video of them measuring the crispness of the crisp because they develop metrics. They have an impactor, crunch, on the chip. And they use a 4189 to analyze that. And if it fails, you know, the tolerances, then it's out. Well, not the chip, of course. You know, the batch, I guess. Not just one chip. Alrighty. We also do a very limited range of sound sources, mainly aimed at building acoustics. So we have an omnidirectional dodecahedron, 122 watts sound power. And then we have an omnidirectional flute-shaped sound source, again omnidirectional, a single speaker, but it's designed so to be omnidirectional, and they used in room excitation to measure partition walls, reverberation, and so on. Really, things you're not interested in, probably, but accelerometers. We've been making them for many years, since the 50s, I think. There we have a wide variety of sensors from, you know, the general purpose one to industrial. For example, Loyang B, the coal power station in Traralgon, they have tens of these, and they use to monitor vibrations on the pumps and systems. If vibration levels go to a certain level, then alarm bells sound, and they rush to replace the pump before the plant shuts down and then causes millions of dollars in damages. Quite a few are accelerometers. I talked in the past year, I actually talked to a few recording artists. They bought a few accelerometers from me to go and record environmental installation or heart installations. So accelerometers are piezoelectric accelerometers, so I have a crystal. You can use them attached to the surface and use that as a high quality recording device. Rather than measure air, you'll measure transfer, vibration transfer. There's an article on our website. There's an art installation in Glasgow, for example, that was instrumented with a few accelerometers and then recorded and then replayed at the Tate Gallery or whatever. Okay, so, not unusual to be used in a different sort of lateral application. Sound level meter, another range of products that we've been making for a while. This is our current platform, and it's been out quite a while, 10 years, but surprisingly still very up to date, and we just refreshed it last year, and we have some new software as well coming out next month, which allows to do even more advanced applications. So this thing is no longer really, hasn't been the case for a few years, a sound level meter, as it can do many things. Actually, one of our competitors paid us a compliment. They said it's not a sound level meter, it's a portable acoustic laboratory. but it is. And this one is a dual channel instrument, so you can measure two microphones, you can do things like this, which I'm going to talk about in a sec. Anyway, so, but again, even in Australia, we have hundreds and hundreds of this platform series, okay? Then let's not talk about the older platforms. We have thousands, okay? So very popular. There's various level of complication or advancement, going to simple OH&S, you know, factory noise, sound level meters. Okay, then we have a multi-channel platform. We go here a step further in terms of technology and what you can do with this system. But basically, I just concentrate with this. This is called Pulse. It's an analyzer solution. It's a frequency analyzer. It's an electroacoustic analyzer. It's a vibration analyzer. I can continue. It can do many, many things. Again, more close to your field, we have a full suite of electroacoustic applications based on this multi-channel hardware that allow us to do electroacoustics on loudspeaker designs, headphones, telephones, headsets. I can't mention this customer, but they are a customer. And that coupled with hear simulators, math simulators, or a full torso, or half torso. Or have you ever seen those mannequins? Electroacoustic mannequins? No? Yes? Basically a standard torso with two hear simulators and a mouth simulator. And they use, I probably got a picture. Actually, I got a picture. There you go. This guy, there. Basically they're ISO standard systems that allow us to measure repeatable fashion. Either on headphones or ear defenders, the type of devices and so on. But with this platform, we also have a full telephony solutions. Again, these things are tested with our solutions. I can't mention the name, but these guys have a ridiculous number of these things. And actually, they had a commercial on Australian television last year, and it was a picture of him or her, whatever, appearing at some stage. Okay, and so these, the bottom here are some specific solutions. So electroacoustic, these guys here. The noise source identification, which is we're talking about later on. So let's leave it for a second. This is also a noise source identification solution, which is still here. And then we have some OH&S applications. Very, very briefly, because this is the least interesting for you, but nevertheless, it is a loudspeaker. These are, it's our division, vibration test systems division, and what they do is they design and manufacture electrodynamic shakers. So, big electromagnet or permanent magnet shakers, and these things are used to shake anything that needs to be shaken to vibration. So I've worked in a company where we shook Vegemite, a pallet of Vegemite. So you can, one day you'll be shaking Vegemite to simulate transport vibration. But we also do more interesting things like shaking satellites, payloads, okay? So this little fellow here, before going to space, was tested on one of our 994 shakers. So imagine a very large electromagnet where you can see the size of the height of these people here. And so they're very, 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 very large shakers or loudspeakers. And so anything that goes into space is shaken with one of these things. We have, I'm told, 95% of the satellite testing market. So we're quite active. As I said, in Australia, we have surprisingly a large number of these. And not far from here in Monagita, near Sunbury, we have the largest system in Australia. There's four of the model before this one. Four of those used to shake full vehicles, military vehicles. Okay, that's right. Who said LEA? Someone said LEA. Yes, that's right. You've been there? Have you seen it? No. There's a large pit, concrete pit, and there's four of those in. Yeah. Very expensive. It was before my time, unfortunately. But anyway. never mind. And the last one, the one I already mentioned, so that's this is the airport noise monitoring services. Very briefly, because it's kind of fun, I'll show you a video. This is the airport noise monitoring. We have a very advanced web team, actually, in Melbourne. They're very clever. And this is a public interface that Air Services Australia, which is the company that mans most of the international airports in Australia, requested this solution for us, the public, to see what the noise levels are. So what we have access to transponders and radars on the aircraft. So we know it's a Qantas aircraft. We know the altitude, we know the airspeed, and as it travels, you can see these are all the noise terminals. Sorry, I'm wicking about that. So these are all the noise terminals that were located because I suspect the FAA dictated that that's where they should go. And if you live in that area and you're watching television and are disturbed by an aircraft, you can go here. This is not real time. We're not allowed to do it in real time for obvious security reasons. But with a 50-minute delay, you can replay and say, oh yeah, at 11 o'clock, Qantas QF, blah, 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 broke the limit. The little dot went red and it said 75. I don't know what that means, but then click on another page and you file a complaint. Okay, so it's a tool that enables the Air Services Australia to cut down their time, of course, you know, to deal with complaints. So anyway, you can see this yourself. If you Google WebTrack Melbourne, you'll find this, if you have spare time. And similar, but this is for urban noise. I'm not going to go into details, but zoom, zoom, zoom. This is the B&K factory in Denmark, in Nærum. So that's the factory there. Four terminals, same concept, but applied to an urban, a mining, a construction site. I'm going to skip this anyway. Alrighty, I'll start it out again. And very, very briefly, this is a very, very short list of Australian and New Zealand customers. I'll leave it up for 5 seconds and then I'll take it off. But this one shrinking, not because we want it to shrink, just because it is shrinking in Australia, unfortunately, but everything else is kind of okay. Alrighty, so forget it. Well, do you have any questions about this? Probably not, but good. All right, what I'll do then, I'll go into the next, the one actually we're interested in. Okay, so as part of our sound and vibration solution, we have an area which we refer to as noise source identification techniques and solutions. It is a generic term that we use to define an engineering tool. Really, it comes down to an engineering tool that allows us to do just that. So identify and rank noise sources. Okay. So we're going to just have a very top level look at this. As I said, we could spend hours, my colleagues can talk for about 2 days on this subject, but I'm just going to give you an outlook on what the techniques and the names, so the names at least will stay with you, and some of the uses for these type of applications. And then I've got this that I can use very quickly, just to give you an example of, this is the simplest of the lot, and also the granny of all, because this technique called sound intensity has been around for, you'll see actually, I got a timeline, many years. Okay, sorry. Alrighty, so as B&K, we have a wide range of solutions, but to date, we have a very complete solution. If you're not in that space, it might not make much sense to you, but in engineering, product manufacture design, there are requirements either by legislation where you would want to use some of these techniques, or, of course, dictated by product development or troubleshooting. Okay. Having said that, this technique is also used by consultants for building acoustics, because I can use these to find leaky walls. Okay, so I can map and find leakages in partition walls or facades and so on. Okay, so as you can see already, we come down to the simple solution, which we refer to as sound intensity, and then the multi-channel array acoustics, and we sometimes refer it just as simply as array acoustics. So with this technique, we have two microphones. So it's a bit cheaper because we only have two microphones, and but it's also at some limitations. And then the array acoustic type of applications, where we have multi-microphones on arranged in a specific array. The design of the array will be the subject of another 3 hours talks. Let's not go there. But again, different size and shapes of these arrays give us different performances, and then they can be deployed in different applications. I'll go straight to it. Disadvantage, advantage, but the main advantage of using this or this one is, if you are a product manufacturer of, say, a washing machine or a vacuum cleaner, you have to declare that that device passes noise regulation for sound power. So there are certain limits for different devices or appliances and products. So the limits are defined as sound power. That sound power measurement is fairly strictly dictated and regulated by standards, worldwide standards, IEC standards, actually. So, to cut the long story short, if you have to do sound power measurement today, the only way of obtaining legally valid measurements is to use a sound intensity probe like this, because that's the only system that is currently in the standards. As you would know, standards are very slow to change. It takes a long time. So, the latest revision of the standard, I forgot now when it was, maybe it was 6-7 years ago. These techniques, the multi-channel techniques, have been around for a while, okay? So, but yet, they're not implemented. We can measure some power with this, and we did comparisons, and we get the same subjective levels, but they're not in the standard. So, although we can measure some power, tick, from a legal point of view, that wouldn't stand. You want to do noise sensitification? Yes, they can both do it, but disadvantage of this is takes a long time because I have two microphones. I have to scan a surface. I'll show you later. As you can probably appreciate, with an array acoustic setup, I can do, depends on the array, but with some arrays, I can just do one shot measurement and I get a complete map of what I'm looking at on the spot. Okay? But of course, One main the decision making parameter is the price between the two. Is that mine? Okay, so as I said, noise source sensitization is a generic term for a series of different measurement techniques. And so sound intensity, again, I'll pull it up again. Sound intensity, that's it. The sound intensity with the two microphones, there's nothing like it. There are some other new techniques based on non-microphone sensors, but let's not go there. We don't make them. But that's a good reason not to go there. But there are, but again, from a standard point of view, those other techniques are also not in the standard. And then the array acoustic ones have basically two main domains which we're going to look at. And although we split it in three, we have what is called or referred to as acoustic holography, beamforming, and spherical beamforming. Now, these two use the same mathematical technique. This doesn't, uses a different one. This one is the oldest of the two in terms of array measurements. This one is relatively new, 90s, at least commercial solution, we're looking at mid-90s. When this thing started to appear. As Brulink here, we've been in it for a long time, starting with sound intensity since the 70s, if not before. Okay, so why would you want to perform a noise source amplification measurement? And I have to say, these techniques are really driven, or were driven, by automotive and aerospace. Those are the guys, I guess, with the money and the urge to cure a specific noise or to change the design of a, an engine or an aircraft cabin and you know, needing something quick. So driven by these guys, if you look at an engine, you know, from in terms of noise sources, well, there are defined noise sources, but there are quite complex interaction and uncorrelated noise sources in an engine. So if you just take your sound level meter and you measure sound pressure, you're not going to learn much apart from the level at that point perceived is this. Okay. So if you really want to know where to cure a specific noise problem in an engine, then these techniques help you again to do a, I know it's a pretty picture, but it is a useful pretty picture. So you can just go and say, okay, at that frequency, I have a hotspot there. It's my pulley. Maybe I need to change the type of a drive belt. Switch from a chain to a belt. Yes. these were developed during the war, I believe, but these were early detection system. They weren't developed, of course, to look at noise source on an engine or anything like that, because they didn't really care about, you know, if the customer complained about an aircraft noise. But these contraptions were developed to detect aircrafts and bombers coming over, I guess in England and the US or whatever. So I can't tell you much about the design of those. I haven't studied them really, but they look very interesting. And there's quite a few other different permutations of this. Looks like it. So if we look at the history of noise intensification, actually sound intensities, I suppose the techniques was developed in the 70s, but commercialized as a solution early 80s. So this is the techniques we have here. And as I said, still very much in need nowadays. And again, you'll be surprised how many customers in Australia have these solutions. Holography, it's quite, you know, not super new, but not super old either. So in the 90s, holography was developed. And then the beamforming, actually not mid-90s, but the early 2000s. Now, at this stage, this doesn't mean much to you, holography and beamforming, but in a second it will. Now, these ones I'm going to sort of rush over, because the basic message is sound intensity, it's sound intensity. It's defined and that's how it works. Holography, it was developed in the 90s and it worked, but it was a bit clunky. It did this and that's about it. Beamforming was developed in the early 2000s or commercialized in the early 2000s and it did this. Then from then to today, company like ours have developed enhancements, improvements, and trying to overcome some of the limitations that these techniques have. So, this one, I'm not going to really go into details, but that stands for specially optimized near-field acoustic holography. Yeah? Yay! Okay, so this one, it's near-field acoustic holography, also known as special transformation something, SF, I forgot now the SF bit. It was renamed to NAH because it's easier. So this is an enhancement of that which improved the spatial resolution of this technique. So if you use the older technique, you may measure, say, the side of a car or a wall, and your spatial resolution will be quite poor. Okay. So because of the mathematical techniques developed up to that stage or implemented up to that stage, there were limitations. This was introduced by B&K in 2005. 2006, we came up with another thing called patch holography. Holography, because it's near field, you measure your noise source quite close. So you have your array microphones very close to the structure, hence the near field definition. If you want to do a larger structure, you have to have, with the old implementation, you would have to have a very large array of microphones, lots of microphones, lots of money, of course, also. Or a scanning robot that allow you to precisely move the microphone rapidly. But that also limited the type of noise that you could measure. So if you can guess, if you have to repeat measurements, if you have a transient in nature sound, noise source. You can't really repeat measurements, you know, in batches. So it worked for steady state type of excitation. So if you pump through a white noise, pink noise, continuous excitation through your speakers, then that would have worked. You could have moved your microphones and do your holography. And that's actually one of the limitations of this, because you only do one point at a time. You cannot do transients with this. Okay, so if you have, you know, a percussive noise that you wanna measure through a speaker and see how the frequency distribution is from that, with this, you wouldn't be able to do it because you will be able only to take, well, you wouldn't be able to do it repeatedly. So in the end, you will end up with a bit of a mishmash, okay? But if you used white noise, then of course you can play that for an hour and then you have time to scan all the points, okay? And assemble your mapping. I'm for sure my laptop is making all these noises. Oh, I know why, the USB. Okay, anyway, so in 2006, BNK developed something to make up the pitfall with holography, traditional holography, so they came up with a patch holography enhancement, which allows to use an array, and it's got a little infrared marker, so we know where that is in space, so the operator just takes a measurement, moves, and then he patches it all together, okay? Again, though, stationary signals or sources. 2008, then, so the introduction of spherical beamforming, as the name suggests, it's a sphere and allows to measure the noise in a 360-degree space. Very useful, and again, driven by automotive and aircraft manufacturers, because in one shot, it allows you to do noise source identification on a full cabin. Imagine in a car, well, I got some pictures actually coming up, so don't imagine it, I'll show it to you. So basically the spherical array, it's a ball with 36 or 54 microphones, flush mounted, and 12 cameras, okay? And the 12 cameras then are stitched together into a kind of exploded view or unwrapped view, and then that allows us to superimpose the holography, noise source map onto this picture. But it's very niche. Although I know a few customers out there that are looking at using them in room acoustics as well, because it allows them to do the same. One thing with all of this technique, there is a limit in frequency. Okay, so if you're an audio engineer, you want at least to record up to 20 kilohertz audible range, use your commercial sampling frequency 44, 48, 96. In the engineering field, we care about accuracy more than anything else. So this array, for example, the spherical array, it's guaranteed to give you precise results up to 8 kilohertz. These things can measure above 8 kilohertz, but there are problems. There are problems with ghosting, so what we call side lobes, so the same noise source repeated in different areas. So there is a limitation from that point of view. But again, that covers still quite a wide range of frequencies.
Are you happy to take questions as you go? Or?
Yeah, if I can answer it, yes.
I'm interested in your use of digital audio techniques in your holography. Do you use similar sort of PCM techniques to sound recording, or are you actually using different techniques like DSD? Because I would assume that your ability to form a holographic map be very dependent on the sampling rate of your equipment.
Actually, it's less dependent on, well, it is, but because our equipment is designed, you know, the multi-channel data acquisition system, although it doesn't use commercial sampling frequency, we can sample up to 200 kilohertz with those units. So the limitation with this technique you see is not the actual equipment that acquires the data, it's the array and the way you use the array, in the way, because this one, spherical beamforming, it's a bit easier to use, okay? That one, it's a little trickier. So it's not, you know, some customers think that you can just pop the array, push a button, tuck, got the picture, thank you. I had a call 2 months ago, someone that wanted to rent one for 2 hours. No. First of all, because I don't have one in Australia, so I would have to fly from Denmark. But so the limitation, you know, the actual, our data acquisition system, not an issue whatsoever. And there is no audio processing whatsoever either. It's straight, there's filtering, conditioning, and then straight A to D. That's it. So we, because we're interested in the raw data, you know, linearly acquired and adulterated, if I can use that, then there's not, in bracket, there's not nothing too special about the data acquisition system. What's special about our data acquisition system is that we have a dual 24-bit A to D converter. So it's a patented B&K design where we have an A to D, 24 A to D for the high range and one for the low range. And what that enables, I didn't bring one with me, it doesn't look like much, it's a box, but what enables that system to do is to give you a dynamic range of 160 dB because there are dedicated A to D 24-bit converters for the low signal and the high signal. So what happened with that system actually now is that we don't have any gains whatsoever. It's a single gain, the unigain system. You just plug in your microphone sensor and then you're limited by the dynamic range of your actual sensor or transducer. Yeah. So, surprisingly, not the limitation. Okay. Now, 2009 gets a little bit more interesting, well, from my point of view, but we also developed techniques that allow us to look at these noise source amplification or moving sources. Things that move, like a vehicle, a train, and a wind farm, as it happens. And I've got a video that probably I'll have some time just to show. But anyway, you see here we use a half wheel array. Let's not go into details, but that it's designed like that because it takes advantage of the rod reflectivity to then give you a full mirrored image of your system. And the latest is actually not here because it was released a couple of months ago, but in 2010 we also came up with this thing called conformal mapping, which allows us to take the holography. Imagine the holography is a flat contour, and then apply it to a CAD geometry and actually then add a third dimension or 3D representation of the holography on the actual object that you measure. Okay, it's quite involved in the fact that you have to obviously have the CAD geometry and take the measurement in a specific way, but it's certainly possible. And in 2011, something called refined beamforming, applying some quality metrics, but I've got a list of those. Just very briefly, what it is with the array we measure sound pressure. And then with analysis technique, we extract the noise source ranking. What we can also do is we can map, rather than for sound pressure, but for sound quality metrics. So metrics, psychoacoustic metrics effectively. Things like roughness, sharpness, loudness, Zwicker loudness, articulation index, and other bits and bits. I don't know if they mean anything to you. Do they? Someone's nodding, yay. But certainly articulation index, speech intelligibility, those kind of metrics are used in automotive, for example, for cabin noise. So if you are a vehicle manufacturer, these adds again another level in the fact that you can map those metrics and see, okay, in that area, my articulation index, so the capacity of understanding someone else is talking to you in a noisy environment, will be worse than in that section of the cabin, okay? So, that's that. 2013 is not there, but it's small in writing improvements, but we have further improved the acoustic holography to increase the frequency range. One thing that differentiates holography and beamforming is holography, it's traditionally good at the lower frequencies. I forgot the crossover point, but we look up to 300, 400 hertz. So really that was one of the limitations of the original holography, while beamforming on the other end. So if you wanted to map a complete range up to 8 kilohertz, for example, then you will have to use holography and beamforming. From 2 months ago, patent pending, I'm told, we have a wideband holography algorithm that was developed by the guys in Denmark, which then allows to extend holography. So if you have holography, you can just do that extended frequency range now. Okay. I'll skip that one, actually, because I'm talking a lot. Right. So here's the view of various shaped array and sizes of array. I have to use my finger, sorry, but anyway. So that's an 18 microphone sliced wheel array. The positioning of these, there's a reason behind it again. That dictates the spacing of the microphone, the size of the array dictates your highest frequency that you can analyze up to, and your lowest frequency, but also the spatial resolution, of course. Why do we have an 18-channel microphone? Because it's cheap. Okay, so for many applications, it might be sufficient. 18 microphone, it means you need only a data acquisition system with 18 channels rather than 63. Okay. Then we go to things like this, the portable handheld. This one has 64 microphones. Yeah, 64 microphones, single-sided, which allows to do actually live noise source as well. So you can just pass it over your noise source and you can have a real-time map of where the noise is coming from and the frequency. But this can be double-sided with 64 microphones on the back. And it's used, again, for example, for materials, absorption materials, measurement in aircraft cabins. And the reason why there's a second set of microphones on the back is to delete or cancel reflections and background noise. Because there's always that problem as well. You're measuring a noise source. If you got something happening behind or it's reflected, because you're in a unfinished aircraft cabin, then this allows to do that. Also, this has the infrared 3D positioning system that allows them to do the patches, the patch holography. Then we have 36 and so on and so forth. We have a robotic arm for holography. So with a smaller array of microphone, but an automated robotic arm, then you can precisely do run your patch measurements. The spherical array, the 360, and then this big thing here, we call it a pentangular array because it has 5 arms and 30 microphones, 3 meters in diameters. As you can probably guess already, it's a bigger array, and this is used for far field object, noise source identification, large structure. So I'll pull up the video, but this is what's used for wind farm noise, for example. Okay. From a solution point of view, if you were a user, you will have selected your array because it makes sense in your application. The data acquisition system will be Brillouin Care Pulse, just the number of channels, and then there's acoustic holography, beamforming, spherical beamforming software, and that's it. So you combine all of those two and you have a solution. Okay. There's a few options, of course, if you want to go into niche things. For example, for rail noise, we have a specific train pass-by noise application. I should skip that, but here's a picture. So this is our high-end data acquisition system in a frame. So that would be 120 channels about. So that 120 channels, 25 kilohertz bandwidth, so about 65K sampling per channel. It's a high throughput. It's quite powerful. And actually, we have a version, the high frequency version, for us is high frequency, of course, you can go to megahertz, but we can do 200 kilohertz sampling. And we've sold the system 4 months ago to Airbus in the wind tunnel. Wind tunnel, they do scale models. As you go small in size, you have to multiply your frequency, you have to measure a higher frequency. They bought a 200 channels, 200 kilohertz system. Stash of rack. And I know I was in Denmark last year in November. They were testing this thing. They had racks and racks. And all they did all day was testing the throughput, of course, to the PC to make sure they didn't miss a single sample. So they work. But you know, you see, this is a solution for holography where you have big array holography. They just, I say just, but they came up with a quick. Because if you have to imagine connect every single microphone cable and you have 120, you'll be there forever. So they came up with a patch panel that clicks onto the modules, and then you go. Alrighty, some pictures. So here's an example of the spherical beamforming in situ in the driver's seat, and that's the output. It's not a clear picture, but this is the output for it from it then. So this gives you a rough indication of where the major noise source in a specific bandwidth, frequency bandwidth, is coming from. Then from there you can then move into a patch holography. You see they use that handheld, where you can do a much more detailed and higher resolution measurement. And there, from that, you can really then pinpoint specific, you know, it's that left vent, right vent, or is leaking through whatever, okay? Okay, where are we? So here's another picture of it. So that's positioned roughly at the height of driver's head, and that's the patch measure. So you can see near-field acoustic holography. It is near field, very close to the surface. Now that distance is actually dictated by the half wavelength of the highest frequency you want to analyze. So for 3.6 kilohertz, if you wanted to do a mapping up to 3.6 kilohertz, then you will have to be about 10 to 20 centimeters away from the surface. Okay, so those are the performance, you know, or the linkages with your analysis requirement. This sound quality matrix mapping again, that I mentioned before. So, in my opinion, it's a very good tool if you use these psychoacoustic matrix or attributes already, because it expands it in as a powertrain. Well, I don't know what they're measuring it. They didn't actually specify what they're looking at. But anyway, say imagine again it was articulation index or sharpness. So I don't know if you know what sharpness is, but sharpness is basically the ratio, the difference between a high frequency tone and a low frequency tone. So in a recorded sound, you'll have this ratio, and that dictates in an objective way, this matrix, ideally, I suppose, will give you a number that indicates how sharp that sound is, okay? Roughness, similar, how rough that sound is, you know, and that will probably be linked to say a crest factor, so how picky the noise is and or how compressed it is or stationary. Anyway, so if you whatever matrix you selected to look at, then with beamforming or sound quality beamforming, you'll be able to map it on a structure and actually say from that area I have more of a problem. These are the types of matrix that they actually measured. So that's the sharpness that I mentioned before. But there's, I don't know, I know them by name, but I probably only used a few of those when I used to work in the real industry, of course. Not now. Right, I'll skip that. So when we look at acoustic or array acoustic, there are some main considerations, and As I mentioned, it depends on the shape, the size of the array. But the frequency range is a big one, the measurement distance from the source. So if you wanted to look at wind farm noise, you will not be able to use holography, because you can't. as you can imagine, you can't really be that close to the turbine itself. So in that case, the choice would be, I have to use beamforming, okay? Which is not a problem. It's a different method. Your requirement, spatial and angular resolution occurs, and that depends, it's closely related to the number of microphones and the spacing of the microphones, okay? And the area that you can cover with a single measurement. If you're using the classic, the original acoustic holography, and you only had an array this big, then you'll only see the noise source ranking in that area. These are soft points, but of course, if you're a traveling noise source identificator, there isn't one out there, I don't think. Maybe there's a gap in the market there. You know, you want something quick that you can show up the customer and go tick, 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 analysis, result, and report. Okay. In industry, of course, automotive, they want answers yesterday. So, you know, if you spend 3 days just setting up an array of microphones, then, you know, you're losing a battle already. A selection of pictures, not very exciting but per se, but there's an example on a full power train with a larger acoustic holography for a single shot measurement. Main driver there is when you look at engine noise, you tend to want to know what the noise is over the range of RPM that the engine can operate through. So what you tend to do is either a wide, you know, full throttle under load test from say 1000 RPM to 6000 RPM, and then look at the evolution through there. So if you did patch measurement with that, in that context, then you will be in trouble. Alrighty, and there's a larger array there. There are, I don't have a picture, but with a university in Japan, we developed, or my colleagues developed, a specific array for aircraft flyby. So it's actually now a solution. It's a very large, due to the distance, very large array of 120 microphones that lies on the runway, and we track the radar positioning, a GPS on the aircraft, so we know where it is. And then as they land, I got a nice picture of it. You are able to do noise identification as it flies by, and see if the noise is mainly generated, you know, by the ailerons, the wing surfaces, or the engine nacelles, or whatever. Okay. So again, you see it's progressing in those more, also those more niche application. Sound intensity, right. So now I'm just gonna, this is where I cut the slides by tens of pages. But just two slides per technique in terms of sound intensity, holography, and beamforming, okay? Sound intensity, just very simply, is, well, actually, I go to this one. The three basic parameters of sound are, well, sound pressure, which is what we receive, okay, so the variation of pressure. The actual sound power, which is the capacity of whatever device or whatever emits sound to generate the noise, and the level of noise generated by that. And then the vector that takes that noise, travels through the medium of air or water, and then through the scalar unit, which is the pressure, comes to our ears and we can hear it. So with sound intensity, we are able to measure these vectors. Okay, so we can measure the directionality and intensity of the sound. If you, and I got an example here. Okay, all right. So this is a reference studio loudspeaker. If you wanted to identify the sources from that loudspeaker, you could do it just by measuring the scalar unit, the pressure, okay, if you want. But to do that, you need to put your loudspeaker in a inert environment, namely an anechoic chamber, okay? So in an anechoic chamber, free of reflection, so a free field simulated environment, you can use sound pressure as a method of identifying the source. If you were in a reverberant room, not a reverberant, but a room like this, then what happens is that the scalar unit will be reflected in various way and bouncing back to your microphone, and to use a technical term, mess up your measurement. So you wouldn't be able to do that exact work. Okay? So in a noisy environment, the only way to do this job is to use a sound intensity probe. Okay? Go back. What happened to no? Right. Okay. So the cause and effect here. If you look at the analogy, the power of a heater measured in kilowatts, it's obviously the capacity of or the ability of that device to produce heat, and by how much. The temperature is the scalar unit, so that's what we feel. The increase in temperature caused by this. And the weight that gets to us, it's the vector, okay? Convection. Same for sound. This device can generate a certain level of sound. We measure it with a sound level meter or our ears, but if you use that, you don't know how that sound got to you. I don't have any slides on the technicalities of this, so I'll keep it very simple. But to measure sound intensity, what we do, we actually measure the particle velocity. So sound pressure, pressure variation, and particle velocity. And the way that we do that is by using two perfectly matched microphones. So these two microphones here are at the factory selected from, I don't know, many hundreds of microphones, because they are phase matched. So if you measure the same sound source, there will be a very minimal phase shift between the two, okay? Because the diaphragm is practically the same. Now, what we do with this is, if you point it to, say, the sound source there, which is the projector, this will be able, even with the noise in the background, but I should know, stationary noise, me talking would affect the measurements. So even with these techniques, you need, if there is background noise, it's fine as long as it is as stationary as possible, okay? But so what happens is that the vector will, obviously, the particle will hit the first microphone, measure it, then hit the second microphone. And then the time between the two allows to dictate or to work out what the velocity is. And then we know the directionality of these two microphones. And so, for example, again, I don't have the slide, but if the sound incidence, the noise incidence was at this point, we know that that would be zero, okay, in terms of directionality. So if I put it that way and I measure the sound coming at a specific frequency from that projector, this, then this will be able to measure that vector, okay? I'll leave it at that, okay? Now, example. Just bear with me. Although my USB dropped out. Just bear with me. Okay. All I want to do is bring up the remote monitor. So all I'm doing is displaying the same information as I did. Yeah. Okay, so I can't move it. I think I got a dodgy USB cable. So I just dropped the communication. Oh no. Imagine the display is actually live. Well, it is here. I'll try one last time. If it doesn't, then you can have a look at it when when we finish. Let's see if I can do it again. And if it works, I won't touch it again. Come on. No? No, never mind. All right. Squint. Ah, he's back. Yes, okay, I can't move, because if I wiggle the cable, I'm going to be in trouble. Okay, so anyway, what we have here, you're familiar with third octave frequency displays? Good. Now, the difference with this is that this is a sound intensity spectra. Okay, you see some bars are blue and some bars are white. Okay, I never remember which one's which, but I'll go by luck now. The white is your positive intensity and blue is negative intensity. Let me demonstrate. So, okay, so you saw that it was about 1 point something kilohertz. You see it's all blue? So that's the ability, the probe, because of a directionality, is able to tell me if the sound source is behind the probe or in front of the probe. Okay, Excuse me. So, I'll show you another a gadget that we have on this. Okay, compass. This is just a simple thing to help you. A simple tool to help you find a noise source, for example, that's, you know, a partition wall, the joint between two walls or something like that. So if you put a sound source on the other side, you set it at, say, 1 kilohertz or 500 hertz or whatever else, then you can set this is a 1.6 kilohertz at the moment, but so now I have to hit 1.6 kilohertz. I don't have a reference here, so I don't know. I'll just... Okay, so again, this is a nice example to show you that the probe can tell you that we just passed the sound source, because then it's up to the operator then to, because it's a very simple display to say, okay, now I have to try this way. Okay, so it's not really a tool you would use to do a full noise source identification, because you have to do quite a few tentatives. But if you are sure that you got a leakage in a specific point, you could just quickly with this just scan back and forth and find that point. But more importantly, what you can do with this is you can do a multi-point mapping using this. Okay, so what you will do, say you want to scan that monitor, you will take a number of averages, so say 30 seconds measurement, so you get a nice stable and clean signal, then move to another point, you define the resolution of that. The more resolution you want, the longer you'll be there standing, okay, doing this. But anyway, you will do a complete map of that discrete point, and then your result will be what I just briefly showed before. Okay, so this was done with our sound intensity probe and a customer speaker, just to prove the point. Okay, so what you have here, and I've applied some extra interpolation there. We didn't measure all those points. The points that were measured are the white dots there. Okay, so what I can do there and show you is I can restrict the contour map by frequency bands, octave bands. Okay, so if I scan through now and go, give me that. Now I'll have to use the mouse. Okay, so if we look at this, which is 500 hertz, 250 hertz, of course, that's where the woofer is. What you can see here, and I know it's a silly example, or simple example, but you can see when the crossover kicks in, and we then switch to the tweeter, which is about there. So what we've seen, for example, it's a very sharp crossover. It will switch from 2 kilohertz and then start switching at 2 kilohertz, 2.5, 3.1, boom, we're gone to tweeter fully, okay? You wouldn't use it, because of course you'll know what your crossover is able to do, but if you wanted to double check it, these techniques, you know, can do things like that, okay? So, sound intensity is still a very valuable technique, but if you got time, or you have to do it because legislation dictates that. Give an example, last example on this. Melbourne, there's a transformer, power transformer manufacturers. They have this system to measure sound power, because with sound intensity, you multiply the sound intensity by the area that you measure, that's your sound power, which is measuring watts. When they finish their transformer, they have to give the customer a certificate that transformer sound power is no more than 42 dBA sound power. If they tell the customer that that's what we've done, we tested it with a system like this, and then they install it in the field, and oh, someone cheeky comes and they can do some power measurement and measure the sound power in installation, and they find that it's 50, then they are subject potentially to huge fines and, of course, lots of money involved in going to fix it somehow, you know, once it's out of the factory. So they do invest a lot in testing, also from a noise point of view. That, you know, we're talking about large substation transformer, but also smaller capacity. Okay. You want to walk? Right. Now, briefly, near-field acousticography. As the name suggests, it's, well, the name might suggest, It's called holography because it allows you to create a 3D map or a 3D map evolution of what we measure. In this case, a sound field. So it is a tool that it's used for making high resolution noise source mapping because it's close proximity near field, but also because it has a number of closely spaced microphones generally. Okay, so I'm going to try to explain this, but the way that it works is you have your sound source and you have your measurement plane. So this is where your array of microphone is. So again, this is the monitor. I put my array 15, 20 centimeters away from the monitor so I can measure up to 3.6 kilohertz. Then what it does, because I'm probably more interested on how the sounds propagate on a plane back here. Okay, so what he does, he uses clever mathematical techniques. I don't know if these are really that clever, but anyway, they're clever for me. So what he does, he takes the measured map, okay, or the measurement plane, and what he does, he applies a special Fourier transform. All familiar with a special Fourier transform? Oh my God, you're saying yes. No, I don't know. I'm not Superman. Anyway. That's good. So it takes a spatial Fourier transform, okay? So we go into the wave domain, wave number domain. And then when we look at wave propagation, we can then find that we can tell the system we want to propagate that measurement plane space frequency. We want to propagate that 3 meters back, okay? So in the wave domain, and the wave number domain, we can then translate that wave or each individual waves. Obviously, this is done per bandwidth very quickly, of course, by the computer. But then it will take in each individual bandwidth and that spatial Fourier transform, propagate it back 3 meters, and then using an inverse spatial DFT, give us back our sound field or sound plane or calculation plane, as they call that. So if you imagine, we can back propagate this measurement plane several times, and that will create an holographic image of that sound. So that's one of the things also with holography, that it's you know, the key thing with holography is that we can do that. We can look at the propagation of a plane. So we measure near field, we take it back. Hopefully, we're happy with the results. Okay? Well, with me? Good. Let's look at beamforming then, because this really gives you immediately the information of why beamforming has uses, but it's different from holography. So, with beamforming, we use a much simpler technique called delay and sum. I've got a chart in a second. But the key points are that you have a camera integrated, so you can see what's happening. You push one button, and you take a measurement in time. So what we'll do, say as this is, you know, idling in the parking position, we measure all of that noise, they replay it, do some calculations, and then get results displayed. And we can replay these results over time, so you can look at the noise sources changing. So this is our planar array with the number of microphones. So what it does, again, for each individual bandwidth, so what it does, it imagine that our focus direction, because we say there's a noise source there. Of course, there's a number of noise sources, but imagine just for the moment that there is one noise source, and it's over there. I'm the array, noise source is over there, propagation this way. As it hits the various microphone, we can then, from the focus point and the last microphone, work out what the delay is, okay? And from that delay, we can then take that delay, sum it all up with all the others, and work out each individual noise source with this assumption that each focus direction or noise source is a focus point for us that we can work out with this delay.
That's why it's called delay in sum. We measure the delay on that one, on that one, on that one, on that one. And then we'll sum it all up. We'll get our modulus out, but also the directionality. Okay. So this technique doesn't use sound intensity. It uses pressure, but that's also holography does the same. It uses pressure, but then we do spatial transformation, more complicated mathematically, and also gives us the propagation holography. But you see, then what we do, we sum all this back together, and we get what we call the main lobe. So if this is the propagation from our only source, assuming there's only one source, then that's what we expect to see, okay? And then when we map it, of course, we'll have a red dot, 31.6 hertz coming from there, okay? Without going into details, but there are some filtering and cleaning that needs to be done because there are problems phenomena actually called side lobes, which are basically ghost images, okay? So depending on the aliasing, the space aliasing of your array, or what you're measuring, you could incur in this ghosting. And of course, I have pictures, but not at the moment, where you can see really complicated maps caused by just ghosting in several directions, not just in a 180 degrees plane. Okay. That was as much as I wanted to take it to, but do you have any questions?
I was interested in the delay sum, because that kind of what I was referring to with the sampling rate. Do you have to upsample? Because I would have thought if you delayed by single samples, you've got quite a, almost like a pixelated image, really, because your angle is going to be quite granular.
It doesn't delay the sampling. All the microsomes are sampled at the same time in synchronous. What it is actually post-sampling, it actually looks at the time delay.
Yeah, I get that. I mean, it's going to be something that you do after you've sampled it. But if you're delaying in your analysis, if you delay by single samples, then you've only got granular angles that you can sample effectively, because you've only got samples that you can delay by, unless you upsample to much higher frequency.
I see what you mean. And I don't know the details, but it is very possible that, because remember, this can really work up to 8 kilohertz. We have a system that can sample at, say, a generic one, 50 kilohertz, 65 kilohertz.
Yeah.
So when you use the system, it doesn't really tell you. You say, okay, I want to do my beamforming analysis up to 8 kilohertz.
Yeah.
What goes behind this problem, we got a full sample anyway. Because I think the system uses sigma delta anyway. So we always upsampling and decimating after. I think that's what it does. But so it's a matter of just saying, just open it up, don't close. You know, don't decimate after. And why not? Because of this problem, just upsample. And you know, you've got all that much more, so you're going much faster than, of course, if you need to, but then avoid that problem. Does it make sense?
You're using delta sigma, you're using very, very high frequencies.
Yeah, you think so.
Yeah.
And listen, I thought we did, but yeah.
All righty. Yep.
With your spherical ray, specifically, is it possible with your data acquisition system to extract audio?
Yes. Remember, we're measuring each individual microphone. And with beamforming, we can also do, I don't know if we can do it now, but we should be able also to do interpolation. So even if we haven't measured say that point in space, because we have all the information about the spatial propagation of that. I don't know if we have implemented yet, but we should be able to say, okay, at that point, what does it sound like?
Mm.
Okay, just pick and replay.
Mm.
So yes. I don't know what the implementation is. I haven't played with it, but the answer is...
I was wondering, with you were talking about cleanup and those sorts of filterings and things like that, whether that might impact on the quality of that audio that you can extract.
Well, you know, it wouldn't be probably acceptable audio quality per se, because again, it's also if it's interpolated, it would probably be, you know, limited up to 10 kilohertz, maybe 8 kilohertz, or even less, depending on what selection you've made. If you open it up to maximum, it will still be probably 10 kilohertz, you know, not really high sampling or a high bandwidth. I don't know. From an audio quality, but from an engineering point of view, it would be sufficient
yes.
to make a judgment from a reproduction point of view?
Yeah.
Don't know.
Because there are other spherical microphones, like the Eigen mic.
Ooh, we're going out of my field here, but...
Yeah. All right, okay, yeah. Fine. Which is working on a similar principle, but it's actually
okay.
working in an audio context rather than just a data measurement.
Okay.
So yours is principally focused around getting a visual display.
Yeah, well, it's an objective measurement. It's visual, but there are also subjective data. You know, we can measure some power of an area or pressure, but it is limited to the engineering range. Does that make sense?
This comment, but doesn't the technology sample each of the microphones at whatever rate you want, and then separately process the
yes.
information?
That's true.
So you've got all the full bandwidth channels available to you.
That's true. What I was saying, if you pick a point between two microphones, the interpolation of those two points, then that might be a lower quality. But we will have the original data for the actual
exactly.
physical microphones, and they will be sampled up to whatever, probably the maximum sample frequency of the system.
And your Fourier transform ability would enable you to put those images phase coherently over the band. That your spacing.
Yes, the spacing is a bit
different. Any other questions?
Get the right code.
That's
all.
That's
all. In your arrays, I mean, you've got matched microphones in each of those.
Yes.
The
thank you. I didn't mention that, but the microphones. Sorry, Mark made a point which I probably should have mentioned, but the microphones we use in the array are matched, face matched. The only thing is they're not as face matched as this.
Right.
Just because virtually the two techniques, beamforming and holography, are more giving. So they're a batch, they're from the same batch, or matched to I forgot the tolerance, say 0.1 degree or something like that. But these two need to be, because we measure the particle velocity between two points, and the spacing is what it is. These are much far, the phase matching is far greater on these two units. But all of those array microphones, as they come from the factory, they're actually our cheapest microphone, believe it or not, but because you have to buy so many. So they're only about a size, they're short throw, little microphones, quarter inch. But they're all in the same range of face matching. So they are, say, between 0.5 degrees or something like that. I'm just throwing a number now, but I've got a data sheet, I could open it up. But yes, they're all face matched. Otherwise, because one thing I didn't mention with holography especially, the techniques they use to decompose the various sources, it's based on principal component decomposition, or singular value decomposition, using matrices. So of course we have a matrix of FFTs for each of the points, and then those are assembled in a matrix and then decomposed. And with a matrix, if you have coherent sources or coherent, multiple coherent surfaces, the matrix falls apart. Mm-hmm. So you actually have to give the system uncorrelated. And so holography, the dimension, what it has, you have to have a reference microphone to find the correlated sources to that microphone, okay, and then put them all together correctly. And there is a thing, an indicator that tells the user you need another microphone as a reference because it measures some noise on the matrix or some kind of the quality evaluation metric. And then you will have to have multiple references. But that, the beamforming again, is much simpler than that. But again, we don't get that propagation plane.
In terms of things like defense and law enforcement, is there applications in terms of noise source?
Yeah.
Say, for instance, you've got a massive array or massive area you want to sample, like a city, and you're trying to locate gunshots or something like that.
It's not from us, but I know there is something in the US, maybe San Francisco?
Yeah.
Someone came up with a gunshot, but it's similar, but it's not the same technique, because we're looking at, obviously, we're talking about a larger scale, larger area. But yeah, actually, my colleague lived in San Francisco for 6 years, and he mentioned that there was something. But
he carried one with him.
It wasn't him. No.
Yeah.
He's a nice guy. honestly. But yeah, so someone came up with that. But then we had a project, we haven't pushed it yet, and I don't know much about it, maybe. But we're actually working with a company or a university on underwater detection, intruder detection. So based on similar techniques underwater to detect, you know, submarines, small submarines, divers, and also using then neural network, differentiate between different sources and say, okay, that's a submarine, that's a whatever else. Sorry?
Search for Red October.
Just clever. Mm-hmm. But that's that, yeah, that's a project that we haven't started because we need some partners.
Those two microphones,
yeah,
that thing, how close together are the diaphragms?
Yeah. They spaced by this plastic thing. Let me... This is a 12 millimeter. Okay, so I'll just put it up. It's only plastic. If it was the microphone, I would be more upset. So the spacing, though, the spacing is variable, okay? The spacing is dictated by the frequency range that you want to measure and analyze. So 12 millimeters, I got a chart. 12 millimeter is the kind of multi-purpose spacing, but say for example the transformer guys, if you want to go down to what it is really, the noise 50 150 plus some harmonics, not going too high, then they use the 50 millimeter spacer, and that's because of the wavelength. Of course, you can imagine we would miss all the low frequency with the 12 millimeter, and so that's the distance. So I think there's also 6 millimeters, so you can go even further high in frequency. And you can interchange this with quarter inch, because with quarter inch, then we can push the measurement up to 40 kilohertz because of the microphones. The diaphragm, of course, can measure higher. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. If you think of anything.
I'm interested in actually finding the cause of the noise, and can you sync the sampling rate with, say, a gear train speed to actually identify which gear train is actually making...
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So you actually sum that particular noise.
Yeah.
Is that something that you do with beamforming as well?
You can do it with beamforming, or you can do it with much simpler, pressure measurements.
Yeah.
So rotating machinery analysis is, I'm going to say with respect, run-of-the-mill for the system. So We have a solution that allows us to do either waterfall analysis or spectrograms against RPM or rotational frequency, or you can actually individually extract each harmonics as they evolve through an RPM range. So, you know, with a gear, of course, you'll have your gear meshing frequency, depending on the number of teeth, but you can do all of those things and then extract individual components and do whatever you need to do afterwards. But yeah, so the answer is yes, and you can also synchronize with beamforming. And then run up, run down, and look at the various bits and bobs. Yeah.
You mentioned with the EMS mapping of aircraft,
yes,
there was like a number 75 dBSBL or something.
Oh, I just plucked that. I don't know what the limit is. Yeah, no, I don't know. I don't actually know what the legal limit is.
No.
Maybe I should ask.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'd be interested to find out about that because we have, I mean, where I live in Greensboro, we have rather an interesting issue with a number of people that drive their souped-up cars very, very loudly down the road.
Don't worry, I have the same. I think it's widespread.
Yeah, it is. I mean,
well, yeah, we're going to nuisance there, you know, for vehicle noise. There are limits. Look, for vehicle, but this is for vehicle type approval. So when a new car, say, comes to Australia, need to meet certain legislation for outdoor noise, or what is called the pass-by noise. A standard car, say a Toyota Corolla or something like that, the limit is 74 dBA. But then it comes down to the EPA and Victoria Police. And it's in legislation in Victoria, and that limit might be different. They might refer to the ADR. You know what an ADR is?
ADR.
Australian Design Rule. So they are the design rules that dictate what a vehicle... how a vehicle should comply for safety, crash, noise, breaking, and there's 90 rules, I think, but 83, ADR 83 is the regulation for noise. But that's a federal, and it only applies to new vehicles. So when, having said that, as part of that test, although it's not the mandatory test, they do a stationary tailpipe noise measurement, just stationary 30 seconds, and they note down the level. I think that's the level that the Victoria Police could use to refer it. So say you bought an Harley Davidson, it's already noisy, but passes just the limits, and then you remove the silence and replace it with a high-performance tube, basically, with nothing in there, and your levels bump, you know, jump up 10 dB, per se. If the police stop you, they, in theory, should be able to go back to the ADR for that vehicle and say, well, you've done something to this vehicle, it's modified, it's breaking the law, fix it or dispose of it. So that, you know, it depends. You should, I think the EPA has a number of booklets on noise, environmental, but also, you know, traffic noise and things like that. So make a complaint.
Oh, yeah, I'll be interested to find out. Because
I'll tell you another, Christoph, you?
Frederick, sorry, French.
That's suspicious. You are an expert in environmental noise, so.
For the noise from the engine, not sure that EPA has.
They really care. But the.
They do industrial noise for. There is ACPP number one for. Industrial, commerce and trade,
but not for,
and music noise APA number two, and
but not for.
I've not heard about.
There is something because they have a noise station at the EPA in McLeod. So in theory, if the police say your car is too noisy, they could send it to the EPA in McLeod and say they have a sound meter. They go, and I think they got a dynamometer, so they can put the car under load.
Yeah.
So. I don't know how often they use that station. Sorry?
Question, general question.
Yeah.
What levels of performance do you have with your basic elements, your microphones, your equipment? You said you had 160 dB dynamic range
with
data
capture system
on your capture
kit.
Where are the microphones at? What maximum SPLs? What noise floors?
You tell me what performance you're interested in, and I'll pick a microphone, because we have.
Well, I want a noise floor of 0 dB.
You can't. But you can have a 5 dB.
Oh. Okay.
So.
And the dynamic range of those elements for 1% distortion.
Let's see.
Or whatever you want. Point one.
Pick a, well, it's not pick a number, but it's so for low background noise, we have one microphone type for 955, and it's. I'm going to bring it up now. We'll have to look at the data because
and
this.
That's a 25 millimeter diaphragm.
So it's a half inch.
So it's a 12 mil diaphragm. Okay,
4955. Okay. Right. Okay. So let's go. All right. So that's a background noise, I think. Yeah, noise spectrum. Minute.
It's doing pretty well.
All right, come my temperature. No, I was expecting 5. Plus 5 supply voltage. That's a linearity. It's your functionality. Right. Excuse me. Which are we looking at? 3% one, yeah.
Yeah, that's 110.
Yeah, that's 110 in up limit.
But that's a sensitive microphone.
It is. It's a high sensitivity microphone.
What is its noise floor?
Noise floor should be, I think, it's 5 dB.
Okay, so it's 5 relative to threshold.
Yeah. What is it?
Less than 5.5.
Thank you for seeing it, because I can't see it, but it's about 5.
Third row.
It should be up there because it is the main feature of this microphone. There. So less than 6.5 dBA, less than 5.5 linear.
But then, yeah, and then the dynamic range is
110.
About
110. Yeah. And frequency will not.
Yeah, we wouldn't use that because that's distorted around the city.
No way.
No, but the noise floor is so low. And then if you go to the other side, you've got microphones that can withstand high SPL.
Yeah, so we have 4931. You know all these numbers. You don't know the numbers. I have to remember them.
I tried to read them.
Which is the wise thing to do.
So, that's 184.
This is a quarter inch.
Well, noise measurements.
But is that for a distortion spec? Very hard to find distortion specs on some people's microphones.
You know, if it's not a data sheet, you can always send me an email, Graham, and I can ask the factory. They send me the non-published information if I ask really nicely.
No, it's just general interest.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, if you really wanted to know.
See, that 184.
Yeah, true. Well, it's a 10% distortion limit.
Yes.
Up to 194.
So 3%, 194.
Yeah. You know, it's this microphone is popular in Australia.
At least you publish your own microphone.
No. Sometimes it's a pain, though, because we put too much information compared to other competitors. But anyway. So this one will work up to 184, and burst pressure on the diaphragm is 200 pascals. 200 dB, sorry, 200 dBs, 200 pascals, 200 dBs, yeah. We have hundreds of these in Australia, in defense, or H&S. They measure it, you know, they use it for tank and gunfire, surprise, surprise. Man. Oh, yes. Similar.
You provide like a separate power supply for this, then?
This one is just a cartridge, so you have to match it with a preamp. Preamp. Polarized. So you can use any of these BNK actually, preamplifier. So for that, you'll need a power supply. It can provide polarization as well. But we do have a two-channel unit, just a portable battery-operated unit that you could have. And then we have another type of a preamplifier that follows an IEP standard. That's for pre-polarized microphones. And that it's much simpler and cheaper to run. But, yeah. And uses a coaxial connector rather than LIMO.
So going the other way, what's the noise floor on that?
Oh, I don't know if it's probably published, but... No! I don't know if it's published on this one. Can't see it. I don't think it's published on this one. I would expect it to be probably in the 10-15. Yeah. That's around about this thing.
That's 170 dB dynamic range.
No, this one is 140. The sound level meter, you mean?
No, the dynamic range.
Oh, sorry, on this one. Yeah, sorry. Because it's such high pressure. I was going to say. No, it's gone. But then we have several permutations. The standard microphone, this one here. That's a USB going again. There you go. Take it off. Forget about it. But the standard microphone that comes with a sound level meter, this combination is 20 dBs background noise, which is self-generated noise by the instrument and the preamplifier. But you take that off and you replace it with a 4955, then you can go down to 5 with this. So it's pretty good for a portable instrument as well.
You've mentioned the A-lighting and you've obviously got third octave filters in there. I think the C-lighting was used for aircraft internals and engines. I used to be in the old
The C weighting here, it's used for impulsive noise as well. So there's A, linear, C, forgot now, and also G weighting, which is used for very low frequency, so you know, sub 3 hertz.
Yeah. So they're all in there?
They're all in here. On the instrument, yeah.
I thought they would be. Yeah.
Before we've got
one.
And all of the consumer, all of the microphone business was sold off the DBA.
Nothing to do with us anymore. For many years, someone was asking before, I forgot now, but yeah, I think for many years now. He was part of the streamlining of the business.
Do you have a solution in wireless microphones?
Not yet. I don't know, R&D, it's like any R&D department, very closed up. So me, poor man in Melbourne, not allowed to know, but I know some competitors have some wireless microphones.
Sirius,
yeah, and Rion, I think they've released one. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it will come. Mm-hmm. Apparently not a priority for us.
I'm wondering if Vian can only do any like sound probes that actually know what their position is, so they have like accelerometers or inertial devices.
No, well, not off the shelf. Not off the shelf. It's not unthinkable because nowadays, you know, there's cheap MEMS microphones, MEMS microphone and accelerometers in this thing. So yeah. Get an iPhone and then you can do it. But yeah,
a rubber band.
Yeah. But you know, we are very much driven by the customer set that we have, which is quite large. But yeah, that I don't know. Might be on the roadmap, who knows. But yeah. Any more? Thank you then.
Thank you.
Again. Not twice. That then, you know, it goes to my head.